Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Yeah, when you're sitting there, you use this device, Sean, and you have to change the settings on it, and then you use it the next time, and you forgot that you changed the settings the last time.
Oops.
I forgot about that.
That's called being one step ahead of yourself when you least expected it.
Because remember, we had to use it one day as a backup?
Oh, that's right. We had to make the call to the equipment bullpen there last week.
Yes.
Right.
So I went to the equipment bullpen, but in order to use it in that setting, I had to change the settings. So now I'm sitting here and I'm starting to talk, and I don't hear anything, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, that's right. I better change this. I forgot that. Now, I've done this often enough where I can sit there, all right, I got it. We can diagnose the problem and take care of it quickly, which we did. So actually, during the theme song, I diagnosed and corrected the problem. Hit a few buttons, scroll a little bit, hit a couple of more buttons, and we're in.
And we were connected all along. I just figured you were across the room, just didn't have your headset on.
So. Oh, no, I'm sitting here and, you know, talking to myself. Well, wait a minute, that's a common occurrence on this show. Oh, well. Now we have, what, Tony Knopf's on today, right?
That's right, later this hour.
Yes, looking forward to Tony and talking with him about the business of sports. Joe Lunardi tomorrow, I believe.
That's correct.
So we got a lot going on here.
Yeah, and you and the great Mike DeCourcy with some college hoop talk coming up at 4:35.
That's today.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I'll be talking. It's very interesting. The Big Ten, and we'll talk some national stuff, but the Big Ten's going to be interesting when the tournament comes up for a couple of reasons. Number one, let's go to the top of the conference. Michigan State is very talented, and I think in some ways Tom Izzo's doing one of his better coaching jobs because, number one, Josh Langford's been out. Langford is not the best player on the team, but he is a pivotal guy that makes your team so much better. When that guy is your second or third option, you've got a really, really good team. But they haven't had him for the last 2.5 months. Then Nick Ward got hurt. Not only did Nick Ward get hurt, but he hurt his left hand. And Nick Ward is left-handed. So all that stuff he does down in the post, when he does get back, how effective will he be passing the ball out of the post? Well, he doesn't do it that much. but shooting the ball, and how is he going to be? Because he hasn't had Ward either. Now let's go over to Michigan. Also at the top of the conference. Well, Charles Matthews has been out. He's been wearing a boot. Now, Isaiah Livers has started in his place. Livers is a really good player. But let's use a baseball analogy here. Okay? I have a great setup guy and a great closer. My closer leaves and is either traded or signs a free agent contract. So what do? We take the great setup guy and we move him up. We're fine. Our closer is going to be fine. But here's the problem. Who's the new setup guy? Well, Isaiah Livers, on a team that doesn't have a lot of depth, Michigan, now is starting. So a team that already had very little depth outside of Isaiah Livers now has less depth. And when you're trying to win a tournament, and for Michigan State and Michigan, it's going to be attempting to win it 3 games in 3 days because they'll get the double byes. All right? that they have major questions going in because now the dynamics of their teams have changed. And for Michigan, I think the depth thing is a huge problem for them in a tournament. Now, in the NCAA, it's not so much. You've got that day off in between. You've got longer timeouts. That makes a big difference. But we'll talk to Mike about that and more. Minnesota beat Purdue last night. Penn State's got Rutgers tonight. This will be a good old-fashioned rock fight here. That's what it comes down to. This will be a rock fight here in Piscataway. And then they'll have Illinois coming up on Sunday at noon Eastern Daylight Time. Okay, we have to move the clocks ahead. And you know who gets grumpy when he gets less sleep?
Not Dick Girardi.
No, he's fine.
Yeah, not you.
You're fine. No, I'm fine.
It takes me I don't want to say grumpy, but it takes me a little time to get a little acclimated to it.
Who do we know that's okay perpetually grumpy anyway?
Captain Bitter, you mean?
Yes, the Biffer.
I haven't seen Biffer today.
Usually it's at the end of the month where we're trying to close the gap.
Although I did see our dear sweet friend Bonnie from the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA sends her best to you.
She's great.
Yeah, she is awesome. Stopped in today she's also part of the Milton Rotary. They got a big casino night coming up next month at the Watson Inn, so she was up today to record some stuff for that. But we talked a little bit, got each other on the same page as to the Purdy tournament, which is 2 months away, 2 months, 2 days away.
Yes. Yes, it is. Let's get into something, and we touched on it briefly yesterday, but I want to get into a little bit more today, and that is the... what was brought up by Adam Silver in his interview with Bill Simmons about depression in the NBA. So let's get to the basic right away as to what the reaction is going to be by fans when they look and they hear about an NBA player being lonely and depressed. You're making $30 million a year, cry me a river, right? I think that's the natural reaction. Like, hey, I'd love to have your problem. You know, you have $30 million a year. I think you can overcome your loneliness. I think that's a fair assessment of what most people would say, right? So now let's take it a step further. All right, now let's actually talk about the issue. And the issue, let's take the money off the table and just talk about the individual. We are now, obviously, we are a social media society. Some of us are lesser participants than others. Gee, I wonder who that might be.
Believe it or not, I thought about this last night. I can't do it because of job purposes, but I wish I could give up social media for Lent. No Facebook, Twitter, no Instagram.
Attached to my name, Sean, in reality, is the social media presence. Fair? All right. So, like, all that stuff on social media that you can't stand that I do, it's actually obnoxious. Oh, wait, did I phrase that wrong?
Oh, Steve tweeted again.
That doggone Steve. All right. But let's go to young people in particular. How often have you heard me talk about on the show when we've discussed early entries into the NBA draft? And that, look, let's face it, if you're in high school, you want to go. But I've also talked about that from the league's point of view. I'm talking about the league's. If I'm an owner in the league, if I'm an owner or I'm a general manager, I prefer a more mature league. I think it's a better product, for one thing, but it also can bring with it fewer issues. But the NBA is not that, nor is it going to continue to be that. You have a lot of very young people in the league that are 19 to 22, 23 years of age. They are social media connected. Their brand is their name. So their sponsorships, shoe deals, contracts, Yeah, it makes them a lot of money, but they are the brand. They're also connected in promoting that brand through social media. But social media all brings with it a couple of things. Number one, it brings with the praise. Oh, Sean Carey, you're awesome, incredible. Hey, great game, Sean Carey. Hey, terrific. But it also brings with it criticism. Most people, I think, are in the realm, and I think, you know, I know this is a generalization, but if you get 10 comments and 9 of them are extremely positive, but 1 is negative, what's the one that I think most people lock in on?
Oh, they think about the negative one. It's the one that sticks out like the sore thumb. What about that guy over there? What's he talking about?
Exactly. And in this era of social media, you have more and more people making comments. Social media at times, not always. Okay, I just mentioned 10 comments, 9 being positive, but can be, quote, snarky, for the lack of a better word, right?
Oh, that's a mild way to put it, sure. And I like a lot of people feel powerful when they got that keyboard in front of them.
Right. And that's playing games with these young people. Now, they're allowing the game to happen because they're the ones reading it, reacting to it. You know, and the reaction may be very quiet, but they'll sit there, well, what do you mean my jump shot is squirrely? What's wrong with my jump shot? Just something as simple as that. What's wrong with my jump shot? Whereas the older person will sit there and go, I don't care what you think. I'm here, you're not, so I don't really care what you think. But that is playing games with a lot of these young people. I mean, to be someone right now that is, and I may not be extending it far enough, Sean, but to be someone who's in junior high or high school right now and is social media connected, I think it must be a very, very hard thing. Because obviously, the level of snarkiness, oh, that's Steve Jones. He's fat. He's stupid. He's dumb. He's, you know, whatever it may be. It may be emotional shaming. It may be body shaming. It may be, you know, all this to make you feel like you're better than somebody else. I mean, to me, being in high school or junior high, and maybe I'm going to elementary school as well, it must be awfully tough being a young person right now. Awfully tough.
Well, my nephew is 10, so he is in the middle of elementary school, and he's not on social media. Mom and Dad won't let him do that. He does have a phone, but they have it filtered as to various places where he can go with his web browser. But yeah, I mean, social media for a lot of kids his age and older, getting into middle school and high school, I mean, social media is now part of their everyday lexicon.
Right, and social media can bring with it, hey, Sean's great, Sean's terrific, or, you know, Sean's a jerk, Sean's an idiot, Sean's not so, Sean's, what a dope, you know? They can bring with it all those things that can really mess with a young person's self-confidence. And obviously, you know, people want the affirmation, but there's also a flip side to it, too. Hey, you know, Kevin's great. He's awesome. He's great. And all of a sudden, Kevin starts thinking he's awesome. He's great, the whole thing. It can play with you both ways. And I've talked about this. Believe it or not, this is a topic for several years, Sean, I've brought up in my classroom. Several years. And I said, don't pay attention to what people say about you, pro or con. I said, if somebody's saying something negative about you, it then weighs on you and you're thinking about it while you're trying to do things. Conversely, if everybody's, hey, you're awesome, you're great, you're like, hey, and you start walking around thinking, oh, I'm awesome, I'm great. And I was like, and then you start forgetting what got you to the point that makes you successful. I mean, so it plays both ways. But I mean, it must be awfully tough to be a young person right now. And it must be awfully tough to be in someone who's a digital media. All right, we'll come back with what?
Actually, we got Ken on the line from Lewisburg. He wanted to talk about social media for
the Hi, Ken. Hey, Ken, how are you today? Great to hear from you.
Good. Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking, Ken. I hope you're doing great.
I'm doing just fine, thank you. I have a son that wrestles Division I. I've got another son that will be Division I, and a third one that will be Division I. Social media, albeit as horrible as it is, has become the recruiting tool of the future. I had paid for a recruiting site and a variety of different things, and we have accomplished more just via Twitter and
yes.
the coaches reaching out sort of backwards-wise on Twitter via social media than anything you could possibly imagine. So, albeit that there are some terrible things for it,
yes.
it really does help a lot.
Yeah, that, and I think that was the point I had made earlier. I said, look, there's a lot of good that comes out of it. I think that's exactly what I said. I said, but like anything that's good, there's some negatives to it. And I think we've discovered that through this internet social media era. And you're right. When it comes to, let's just take Twitter, for example. Very important in recruiting. It also can be a great tool in terms of getting news out quickly. I remember the Boston Marathon bombing. You know, reporters at a press conference tweeting out, and we were on the air at the time, and we were using that. So you're right. Social media absolutely has its big pluses, and I can see exactly where you're coming from, Ken.
I'm not a total advocate of it because I think it's abused and
yes,
it also creates
right.
some horrible situations. But, you know, coming from what is an athletic family and scholarships and all those types of things, it's an invaluable tool that has really brought people to modern discussions. I could tell you that my middle son probably would not have been noticed so much if it wasn't for Twitter and Huddle and all those things. And the recruiting service I used was not worth the money at all, where he could do his own without needing me or paying someone.
Interesting point. Now, if you don't mind, Ken, I'll just reverse it for you a moment. As much good as that part has been, have your sons on social media, if they've lost a bout or a match, felt the criticism on social media from doing such thing?
Well, when you're in a particular spotlight, the criticism is always going to happen, whether it
yes.
be in the newspaper or outside. So
okay.
from a parental standpoint, I've never been upset with the criticism because
okay.
I always believe that was part of the game. If you're, you know, if you're going to be a pitcher, you're going to be a quarterback, you're going to be any of those people that are somewhat looked upon differently, then you need to learn how to deal with that and become somewhat thick-skinned for the most part. No matter what athlete you are, it's always going to happen. I mean, just take a look at Murray, you know, like you were talking about. Now all of a sudden, you know, it's that one criticism, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You just have to get used to it. The only bad thing I think about the social media is when you've got young children that don't know what they're doing and people get picked on and make things up. But if there's any way that we could separate between the value of it and the invaluable stupidity, that would be a really good thing.
Ken, marvelous perspective. Your sons are very lucky to have you, to have that kind of perspective they can rely on all the time. Appreciate it
well,
very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Oh, no. Again, I think your perspective was invaluable. And I think for your sons, I think it's invaluable that they have that perspective in the house. I think it's going to allow them to be incredibly successful.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting. I'd talk to you off air, and then I'd tell you who I actually was. So,
okay, thanks, Ken. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
You too. Thanks. See, that again, that's a parent who has their head completely screwed on straight about it. But everybody reacts differently. His kids are better off because they've got, that kind of perspective in the household as to how to, the pluses of it. How often have you seen, let's take James Franklin. James Franklin's use of Twitter and social media, I would say it's brilliant, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
With recruits, getting messages out. I mean, it's been outstanding.
Part of the brand. So, builds the brand, sure.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly. So as I prefaced it when I began, look, there's a lot of great things about social media. We were concentrating, obviously, on one of the big negatives of social media. All right, we'll take a break. Tony Knopp, next half hour. Mike DeCourcy, final half hour as we continue from Rutgers on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I am in beautiful, sunny New Jersey. Tony Knopp is in rainy California. Tony, welcome.
A lot of rain. We've had more this year than the last 7 years combined, but we're not complaining.
No. I'm next to a waste treatment plant. What? No, okay. I want to get to Jim Delaney. Obviously, is going to retire when his term is up, June of next year. What impact, from a business point of view, has a guy like Jim Delaney had on college sports? Because as you talked about, college sports has become a hot buy for many people.
Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a really interesting legacy. You could argue very successfully that he's been the most successful, if not the second most successful conference commissioner there's been. I mean, he's led expansion all the way back to Penn State joining in 1989. Mm-hmm. He did a major TV deal that set the road for pretty much everybody else to make money. I mean, you can make the point that the SEC does a little bit better when it comes to TV rights, but they wouldn't have the deal they had if he hadn't cut the deal that he cut with the Big Ten networks. So he's got an incredibly difficult legacy for somebody to follow in the footsteps of. They're talking about the guy from Northwestern, another guy from Fox Sports doing it. But the other thing that's interesting about Delaney is, you know, despite all the huge business success he's had, you know, people are going to detract a little bit on that he pushed back pretty hard on the playoffs. He was one of the last guys to enable the college football playoff to happen, and also that he didn't push hard enough for some of the Big Ten teams to take part in the playoff once it happened. So, if you look at the statistics, they're a little surprising that since he took over, there's only been 3 football national championships, and there's only been 1 basketball national championship, and that surprised me. Because, you know, the Big Ten's been perennially, you know, challenging for all these things. You've had really good teams. And I'll be curious to see what Big Ten country thinks of him when he leaves. I mean, they're a massive sustainable business. They've got the payroll to pay the coaches they have because of Jim Delaney. I wonder if the next person is going to be held to a higher standard when it comes to competing on the field and on the court.
SEC Network and the soon-to-be-on-the-air ACC Network, which will be in August, are offshoots because Jim Delaney had the ability to look at Mark Shapiro in 2004 at ESPN and say, "You're lowballing me. I'm going to start my own network." Shapiro laughed, and he started the, you know, he got things rolling on the Big Ten Network. Will that in the end be the lasting legacy of Jim Delaney?
I think so. I think what, you know, unfortunately for a number of other conferences that are out there, Jim Delaney is a kingmaker, and he has demolished those who haven't been able to keep up. I mean, the reality is there's a number of conferences out there, the Big East, the Pac-12, that have not been able to keep up. They've tried to, you know, there's the old Mark Cuban quote, which I think he took from Warren Buffett, which is first is the innovators, then there's the imitators, and then there's the idiots. And, you know, Delaney was the innovator. And you could put, you know, the SEC and the ACC network into the very successful imitator category. And unfortunately, there's some conferences right now that fall into the idiots category. And, you know, the American Conference, the Big East Conference, the Pac-12 Conference, they all tried to imitate and did it terribly. And so when you look back on this giant redistribution of conferences, the realignments, and how the money really changed to the superpower SEC and the superpower Big Ten, it's Jim Delaney who did it. When you look back on it, he's the guy who saw all this and set it in motion. And we're quite a while from this changing. I mean, the Pac-12, you know, they're going to try to resell their media rights in a couple of years, and that's going the wrong direction. And, you know, the ACC network, we'll see how effective that is. But, you know, even the competitive imbalance has changed where, you know, the Big Ten has become incredibly powerful at a number of major sports. And the SEC, you know, we see them, they're competitive enough in basketball, but the baseball poll came out yesterday. They have 11 teams in the top 25.
Right. It's amazing. The
11 of the top 25 in one league. That's incredible.
Yeah, I know. That is incredible. When you talk about the expansion, obviously Penn State got it rolling in 89.
Mm-hmm.
Look, when Joe Paterno wanted to form the All-Sports Conference in the East in 81, they had convinced Maryland to do it because Maryland kind of felt, hey, look, we're not the Tobacco Road team. He had convinced them to come along and do it if he could form it.
Right.
Well, Maryland's now a part of the Big Ten. If you go around Big Ten country, and I say this with all due respect as I sit here, the one that doesn't sit well with the Big Ten media and it doesn't sit well with the Big Ten fan base is where I'm sitting right now at Rutgers.
Rutgers. Mm-hmm. Rutgers and Maryland are unpopular.
Right. Now, Maryland, at least, I think a lot of people are okay with. But Rutgers is never – I'm talking about other – this is not a personal opinion. I'm just trying to give, like, the feedback I've received. Rutgers doesn't sit well with a lot of fans and doesn't sit well with a lot of media. In your opinion, from a business point of view, do they bring enough to the table to make made it a good business move?
No. The idea was to expand into the Northeast market and to get, you know, part of the New York, New Jersey market and get the media rights that expand out there. And, you know, there's been some benefit to that. If you talk to some of the fan clubs that travel around and the people who sell into those fan clubs, they do have some success because, you know, people who live in New York that don't have the ability to see the Hawkeyes or see the Nittany Lions, you know, at home very often can go to Rutgers. Like, that's basically what it's become. It's become this,
right,
this away game at home for the Scarlet Knights at almost every game that they have. But the reality is they're just not on the same level. You know, the ones in the realignment that have been the most widely panned have been, you know, West Virginia's move. It's been Rutgers' move. It's been Colorado and Utah into the Pac-12.
Right.
You know, that's what you see the most because what's happened is you have this intent where you're pooling, just like every other sport, you're pooling these media rights and you're trying to split them amongst the teams. And Rutgers just isn't bringing anything to the table. And, you know, some of the feedback that we've gotten on the Maryland play is some upset that they had the tournament in the D.C. area.
Right.
People were not so happy with that. They think traditionally it shouldn't be somewhere that's on the outskirts of where the conference is. I understand the thought process behind it and why they added Rutgers. It hasn't been a success. I wouldn't be surprised if Rutgers eventually isn't a part of this. I know their media rights deals are up in 2024. It's 2023. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out at that point because that's when you're going to start seeing more conference realignment.
How do corporate partners view Power Five sports right now? Because you mentioned conference alignment. If there's conference alignment, it might go to four super conferences. How closely are they monitoring something like that? Because they do bring fan bases and markets to the table.
So they, you know, what'll be interesting for fans to understand with that is they kind of don't. And here's why. So what's happened on the college front is you have all of these different universities who are saying, look, we're outgunned when we're trying to sell national sponsorships and national deals, right? We just don't have the ability to do it. You're not going to have Penn State and Iowa and Iowa State and Colorado and whoever else building up these sales teams to sell their sponsorship, right? So you have these companies out there, IMG, is a big one. Learfield is the biggest. Learfield and IMG cover 90% of the colleges that are out there. And what happens is these companies come into the university and they say, look, we have a giant national sales team that's already pre-built. We will bring people to your university that know how to sell sponsorships, ticketing, and the like, and we will sell you in a package to the major brands. So if I'm sitting at the table and I'm Samsung, or if I'm Walmart, or if I'm, you know, somebody who does a major deal, or Nissan, for example, is somebody who did a major deal with 100-plus universities, I'm not actually sitting down and saying, I'm going to go contact each one of these universities individually. They actually go to Learfield and say, here's what I'm trying to do with my brand, where I'm trying to expand it, and the markets that I'm choosing. And they actually bulk buy them across those universities.
Right.
And that's, believe it or not, not conference-based. So if you look at, like, Learfield, for example, they're a major player in this. They're a partner of ours. Learfield is owned by a big private equity fund. They have Wisconsin. They have Alabama. They have Miami. I mean, you're talking three major brands in three different conferences.
Yep. Exactly. And they have Penn State. I mean, let's face it. When I sit there and I say, talk about the Nissan kickoff or the Nissan tip-off, that was sold nationally. As
right.
to how they,
110 universities are in that deal.
Yep. All right. Now let's. I want to shift gears a bit. We don't usually talk horse racing, but what the heck happened at Santa Anita since you're out there?
You know, they're blaming the weather, saying that, hey, we've had 30-plus inches of rain this year, which I know for non-California, that's not a lot. For us, it's unheard of. You know, last year we had 6 inches total. We're at 34 now. But that's happened before. You know, we've had, you know, 4 years over 30 inches in the last 20. What happened was they actually changed out the staff and the ownership group that was maintaining the field and the turf there. And they've had, I forget the exact number, but I think it's like 28 horses have died in the last short period of time. So it's closed down. I'll be surprised if they get it back open during this race season for Santa Anita. They're trying to bring in new people. They announced a new hire today. But the reality is I think the ownership group is just going to have to sell the track.
Wow.
Yeah. And people hear that and they think, you know, a couple horses. We've been seeing this for the last couple of months. You know, people who are in the industry have been aware of this. But it really hit the news yesterday. And people are thinking like, oh, 4 or 5 horses died. Nope, 2 dozen.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's unheard of.
The NCAA basketball tournament will be coming up. Is that considered to be still considered to be corporate gold?
Corporate, yeah, absolutely. It's not just corporate gold when it comes to the event itself, because like the one thing that people overlook when it comes to March Madness is that it's in the same place and it's announced far in advance. So
right.
anytime you have an event like that, like a Super Bowl, like March Madness, like even when it's in Minnesota, it gives people the ability to plan on it for a year, 2 years, 3 years in advance. And that's where you have people like Learfield and IMG selling into it. You have that, you know, they outsource it to Prime Sport, who goes out and sells it to all these corporations. So it's always going to be, you know, a big time corporate event. Now, if you're planning on going, if anybody's planning on going, the best thing to do is just to go. A lot of times the teams that get bounced early, you know, people leave town. So
exactly.
you can see it like at the top of the stairs that at the end of the first game, half the people walk out, and then there'll just be an entire just market that came up out of nowhere of ticket brokers buying people's tickets and turning around and flipping them for half the cost. But, yeah, it's a corporate gold mine, and it's, you know, as far as, you know, how much money they're making off the off the advertising of it. It's what led to, you know, circling this back to Jim Delaney. Delaney said in the O'Bannon case, you know, for those that didn't follow it, O'Bannon, Charles O'Bannon and Ed O'Bannon sued the NCAA for use of their likeness in the video games. And there was a giant windfall that came back to the players, basically saying, let's pay the players. And Delaney actually came back and said, look, if this goes in that direction, we're going to move Ohio State to a Division III style school because we believe that this is going to mess it up. And one of the major arguments that the O'Bannons made was Final Four. They came in and showed how much money the NCAA is making on the event, which they own and run, and how little of it is being shared with anybody else. So those corporate dollars are all going right into NCAA coffers.
Well, I mean, here's where, for example, I felt, because we followed the trial closely. You know how I follow these things closely. You don't want to keep doing the show where, like, hey, I think the coach should be fired. Yeah, okay, the low-hanging fruit. But you want to do shows that can educate people. The, you know, Bannon right. case we followed closely, and one of the reasons we followed it closely is that, you know, when Mark Emmer took the witness stand and he started doing the ivory tower speech on the stand, which is what I refer to it as, right? Look, Mark, just tell them where the money goes. The money goes right. to women's soccer. The money goes to men's soccer. The money goes to softball, baseball. All these scholarships are available because of that money. And if you can tell and prove to people that all these, quote, non-revenue producing sports or limited revenue producing sports, they can't sustain themselves, are benefiting scholarships for young people across the board, isn't there some common good to the money you're bringing in from the tournament?
And quite frankly, the revenue-driving sports are only driving revenue at 40 universities now. I mean, the numbers have gotten so askew that it's almost a necessity that you have to have major universities like Ohio State, Penn State, you know, the ones that are bringing in giant football revenues, because you're not just supplementing what's happening in your own university, you're supplementing what's happening otherwise at other universities as well. I mean, people think that, you know, Clemson versus Alabama is superpower versus superpower. Alabama spends twice as much money on football as Clemson does. Yep. It's $48 million to $27 million, I believe, last year, which is significant. And if you look at schools that some people think would be a power school, they're nowhere close to that. For example, the Arizona schools put out yesterday that they're trying to get money from the state because they're so far underwater because of coaches' buyouts. They've had to buy out their last two coaches, Todd Graham and Rich Rod. You guys know Rich Rod well up there. But that's state and the state taxpayers in a hole.
Well, and they look, I mean, Rutgers, okay, in all due respect to Rutgers, Rutgers took an advance on what they were going to get from the Big Ten. So they're not going to get a full, according to a story I read, they're not going to get a full share of the Big Ten media rights and so forth till 2027.
Oh, right? So
they're on a different scale. Supposedly, since joining the Big Ten, supposedly, according to this article, they've already lost $191 million.
And they're not competitive. And they won't be competitive.
Yeah.
So I don't see how that's a benefit for them. But that is the argument. You know, there's the argument on one side, which is, you know, the spot that I take, which is enable the kids to make money on their own likeness. That I'm okay with, right? If you're going to buy a jersey of Trace McSorley, then, you know, I'm okay with Trace McSorley getting cut in on that. You know, people aren't buying number 26 jerseys for no reason, right? They're buying it because, you know, SB 26 is a star, and I'm okay with that. But the rest of it really does supplement what's happening at the rest of the university level, and it's a lot of sports that are quote unquote non-revenue traditionally based sports that are become revenue-based sports later in the professional career, such as baseball, such as wrestling, such as other major sports.
Right. I want to ask you about the Machado and Harper broke the logjam on big contracts recently. Okay. Now, you're paying $30 million a year for four at-bats and four plays in the field a day, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball has become so analytics-based. And if you're over 33, you've now become on the road to being an endangered baseball species.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're over 33, it's down 26% participation in Major League Baseball. Can Major League Baseball sustain a model, in your opinion, based on sales, tickets, corporate, TV, that can sustain $30 and $25 million contracts?
It's feasible. So we had this conversation at the university down here, and here's where it's feasible. The market already exists for this in international soccer. So if you're looking at the way international soccer works, generally these guys who are getting these major transfer agreements, such as Neymar, such as, you know, Gareth Bale, et cetera, are much, much younger than they are in baseball. So, for example, yesterday we're watching Real Madrid lose, and they said it's the end of the old guard. So Real Madrid, who's won, you know, the last three Champions League titles, they've been basically the greatest football club in the modern era, got waxed yesterday at home 4-1 by a young team from the Dutch named Ajax, who used to be a big power in Europe 20 years ago. The Ajax team is 20, 21, 22, 23 years old. The superstar for Real Madrid, we were talking about how old he was yesterday, he's 29. So this exists. right? It exists. Now, the problem baseball is going to have is they have to start marketing these guys much, much earlier. And soccer does a good job of marketing players when they're 18, 19, 20 years old while they're coming through the quote-unquote minor leagues of soccer. Now, they have developmental leagues like everybody else, and they have developmental academies, but what they generally do in those cases is they loan those players to smaller teams, right? So Christian Pulisic, right, for example, is the superstar kid from the United States that's been playing at Dortmund for a while, and he just got sold to Chelsea for a heavy sum, and I believe he's 21 years old, right? So that's where baseball is going to go, and the reality for baseball players is your career is now going to look a lot more like an international soccer player, which you're going to be making money from when you're 19 to 28, and that's it. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo is considered a dinosaur. He's 31.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so and you're seeing that.
There's going to be a massive lockout next year. It's going to be the real problem is baseball and MLS soccer are going to have real bad labor issues over the next 2 years. That I personally, if they solve them, great for them. I don't see any way they're going to solve these things. Because, you know, in baseball right now, if you are going to move to the model that you see in international soccer, that means you can't have, you know, players locked up for the first 5 years of their career. Which
exactly
is the way the NFL does it, too. That's got to break in order for them to make their money. And then the MLS right now, you know, you have teams that are only making $5 million a year on their TV deal. What they're doing in the MLS right now is they're telling all teams to not extend any television deals past 2022. Because what they intend to do in 2022 is take all of the TV deals and go do one deal for it, as opposed to having individual deals like they do now.
Exactly, and I read that and looked into that. And what's interesting is that you and I both know the second contract for most professional athletes in this country is really important, but it's the third contract that really sets them for life. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a pattern now where the odds of getting a third contract are only for the absolute elite.
Mm-hmm. And Manny Machado's relatively young. I mean, that's
26.
Why he got the money he got out of the Padres, is because he's not – usually when guys are in that position, they're 30, 31, 32 years old. I believe Manny Machado's only 26.
He's 26, yep.
Yeah. So he's – you know, a 10-year deal for him, it's going to take him to 33, and then they'll write down the last 3 years. I mean, if you look at it for Harper, they've sold an extra 250,000 tickets. They set a record for how much they sold in merchandise, which in baseball matters because they don't share that. You know, in football, if I go and sign Aaron Rodgers and he plays for the Eagles next year, that'd be hilarious. But let's say they did it and he sells a bunch of jerseys, I've got to share that money with everybody else. That's right.
Unless you're Dallas.
Otherwise, right, you know, with baseball, look, they get to keep all that money. All those Harper jerseys go into Philly's merchandise deal, which I think they have a deal with Fanatics, and they've got another deal. So, you know, they've made some of the revenue back. They're looking at it saying it's a $26 million a year deal. You know, we might have to write down the last 4 or 5 years, but, you know, that's what they've historically done in baseball. You've got CC Sabathia and these other guys that by the end, they're just a shell of themselves. I agree with you that I think there's going to be a really bad problem with labor because these guys need to make their money earlier. The teams are realizing it. They're running out teams like the Astros, like the Cubs, like the Royals, who, you know, they're running out a bunch of kids that aren't even arbitration eligible yet, and they're dramatically underpaid. That all has to reset. And that's going to be a bloodbath.
Awesome as always, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it's one of my favorite times of the month.
Oh, to say I appreciate you would be an understatement. Thanks so much.
All right, we'll talk very soon.
Tony Knopp. I mean, we could have kept going and going and going and going. Mike DeCourcy, by the way, coming up final half hour. We'll talk college basketball. I'm at Rutgers. You know who would be really big here at Rutgers, I think?
Who'd that be?
Sean. This area is aching for really great digital media.
Just don't throw away from the Big Apple. Sky's the limit, right?
I think we could sell them on that, yeah.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.